louder, glide on the beat train.
Is coming your way. This is Peace and Social Justice on KZFR 90.1. Listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And this is Peace and Social Justice. I'm Jesse Kearns, Third Friday host. And today we are going to have a show where we're going to review the year 2020. I know 2020 was a rough year. 2020 had its challenges, but it had its triumphs too. And so all the guests that I've got on the show today are going to be talking about these triumphs, maybe tragedies too. And we're going to hopefully peek into the year 2021 as well. But right now, I'm going to take a song break so that I can get a hold of our first guest, who's going to be Bob Trausch of Chat.
Let you down.
We tried to not let you down here at KZFR 90.1. This is Peace and Social Justice. I am going to go with our first interview with Tammy Ritter today. She's going to help us figure out this last year that we've had. It's been a heck of a year, but let's tune in with Tammy here. Joining me now is Tammy Ritter, one of five Butte County supervisors serving District 3, which I guess we could classify that as Northwest Chico, Forest Ranch, Cohasset. Am I in the right direction there, Tammy?
Well, northeast. Yeah, you got the other communities correct.
Very good. Okay, well, I'm geographically challenged, I guess. But Tammy is a professional mediator, which I'm sure is a great advantage or at least a great skill to have as a Butte County supervisor. Today I want to have an end of the year review of 2020. And I know that sounds kind of, 2020 was a rough year, but I want to talk about some of the challenges and the triumphs. Thank you for being on the show today, Tammy.
Thanks for having me.
So the obvious challenges that we've had over the last year is ongoing campfire recovery, housing crisis, the pandemic, even more wildfires, additional wildfires. Care to address those or any other challenges that we've had in the past year?
Well, I think you probably summed them all up. I think that one of the biggest issues is that we aren't done recovering from one
right
before another hits, and I see our community as experiencing a very high level of trauma.
Yes, that is true. And for somebody who is familiar with grief and trauma, that's tough on our folks, and it's evident in, I think, the way people have been relating to each other, and just it's tough. So let's go ahead and go one by one on these. Let's talk about campfire recovery. How is that going?
Well, I think that the actual recovery is going well in terms of we're addressing the housing crisis as best we can. There's a number of folks who are rebuilding. I think the idea that we are going to rebuild paradise to what it once was is perhaps not realistic.
Right. Yeah, that's a tough one. There's a lot of enthusiasm, though, and there's a lot of folks who have made a commitment to rebuild, but I see that there are some ongoing problems in how to do it. What do you think is the biggest challenge in rebuilding paradise, period?
Well, I frequently reference this, but just a couple weeks after the campfire, there was a fire conference. And one of the folks who does some of our GIS mapping said that if we were to rebuild paradise on the exact same footprint, in the same manner that we had built it originally,
right,
that we should be held criminally liable.
Oh, boy.
And I agree with him. I think that we need to really be looking at ways of creating safer, more fire-resilient, easily accessed and easily exited communities. Mm-hmm. And to not do so is negligent on our behalf. And I think there are so many folks who just want to try to return to normal.
Yeah.
Right? And they own property up there. They have the right to rebuild. And so they can either rebuild in this area that they love where they already own land, or they can look at starting somewhere else. And I don't think that that's an appealing option to a lot of folks.
And who I'm feeling for is some of the folks who decided to build and start over somewhere else. And those were communities that were affected by the fires this past summer.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So then what do you think is standing? Well, okay, let's back up. One of the things that you had alluded to is that our housing crisis is related to the campfire. Give me your thoughts on that.
Well, we had a housing crisis before the campfire.
Yes.
The campfire did nothing to help that.
Right.
You know, and like every community across our nation and probably beyond, we are seeing increases in homelessness, increases in poverty level. We are seeing folks who are losing housing because of medical crises or because of losing their jobs. And so I don't even feel like we have seen the full impact of what this pandemic is going to have done in relationship to our housing crisis. So to say that this is a result of the campfire is certainly not true, but it was absolutely exacerbated by it. And then the North Complex fire as well. We still have thousands of people who are displaced. And so I think that it's going to take some really kind of creative out-of-the-box thinking when we are looking for solutions. I think we cannot depend on the state. We cannot depend on the feds. We've learned that over and over again. And when we look at that there have been thousands of housing units built in Chico, we're seeing thousands of housing units, but not at the level where there's the greatest deficit.
Okay. Now, are you when you say thousands of housing units, are you talking about since 2018?
No, I'm talking about since 2000. Well, you know, I saw something about the city council had said that there were 6,000 units that were in the pipeline for the last year.
Okay.
But those were not, they're not all built, and they're all, you know, those are in planning. And,
right.
And not, those are small amount of units that are actually affordable.
Yeah.
And so we have to make it worth the while of the contractors and the builders to actually build the kind of housing that we need.
Sure. So here, you know, I spoke about all of it: ongoing campfire recovery, housing crisis, pandemic, and additional wildfires. And it seems like they're all interrelated because we've talked about them interspersed with what we have here on the page.
Absolutely.
Is there anything else? Am I missing anything? What other challenges have we faced in the past year?
Well, I think when we're talking about COVID-19, one of the other things that we're really having to focus on is how well are we situated to have our folks working remotely? Right? We have all of these mountain communities. Two that I represent, Cohasset and Forest Ranch, connectivity is horrible. We've got folks in Concow. We've got folks in Magalia and Paradise, in Thermalito, folks that don't have the kind of connectivity that they need in order to work remote. And so when we have that kind of situation, then we have folks who cannot keep their jobs.
Right. So when you say connectivity, you're saying just the technology to be able to have the bandwidth to do work from home?
Exactly. Okay. Whether that's schoolwork or whether that is employment, we are very limited.
Yeah. So let's then talk about maybe some of the triumphs that we've seen in 2020. We can dwell in the problem a lot, but I would also like to review some of the triumphs, perhaps, that we've had in 2020.
Okay, you start.
Well, okay, I'll go with something. I'm just thinking of my family, my congregation, where I'm pastor. I'm thinking about my youngest son who just started Butte County, even though he's never set foot on Butte County campus. And you talk about connectivity. I think that for those who have the technology to connect, there has been a different way of looking at connectivity between people as far as holding meetings and finding creative ways to stay connected, even though we are not able to be in physical proximity to each other.
Absolutely. I agree with that one wholeheartedly. And, you know, I will tell you, you know, I was dependent on my devices prior to this pandemic, right? I would say that I had a very close relationship with my, you know, my Apple screen. And today is the first day since Thanksgiving that I received a text from my father, who has been suffering and was hospitalized with COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And today is the first day that he was well enough to reach out and actually contact me via text.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and that's from 3,000 miles away. So we're having to figure out how to navigate, you know, up close and personal relationships that were previously in person every day in this remote world. And, yeah. And I think that we're doing a fairly good job of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, your turn.
I think also the response, right, when we were so limited in PPE, seeing how quickly so many of our local businesses pivoted their operations, mm-hmm. in order to make masks or shields or hand sanitizer, that, you know, folks, that kind of crisis really brings people together, really a recognition of we're all in this together.
Yeah. And speaking of local businesses, it's tragic that so many businesses are struggling right now. But early in the pandemic, I went to a locally owned and operated computer store that builds computers, and I went in and just had a couple of questions about our ability to broadcast and what we need as far as routers and such like that. And they were booming there. In fact, mm-hmm. booming to the point where they're saying we can't keep up. And I asked him, why is it hard to keep up? And he says, well, people are now working from home and they realize that their 15-year-old computer just can't, they can't work from home with that. So he says, we just have so many orders for parts and computers to be built. He says, we're booming. So that's a good thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, the CARES funding that came in, we did have support for individual businesses. So one of the real perks of my job was getting to actually hand deliver, you know, a check to a small business owner for $15,000 so that they could keep their doors open.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the gratitude of this individual, you know, coupled with, you know, I was feeling very highly emotional because these folks have put their blood, sweat, and tears into opening these small businesses, and to have it jeopardized, you know, through no fault of their own, through no mismanagement, you know, no lack of folks who want to use their goods or services. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us now, this is Peace and Social Justice here on KZFR, and we're going to take a little bit of a break to recognize our underwriters. And Peace and Justice is brought to you and made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries, and supplements. The co-op has hot food ready to eat, sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op, open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. And by Chico Velo, supporting bicycling, education, and advocacy since 1980. Chico Velo encourages you to ride your bicycle and park it safely at their bike valet when available at Thursday Night Market and the Saturday Farmers Market. For more information, visit chicovelo.org and find them on Facebook, of course. Tuning in, this is Peace and Social Justice. I am your host, Pastor Jesse, and today I have Tammy Ritter, Butte County Supervisor serving District 3, on my show, and we're talking about the challenges and triumphs of 2020 and maybe some potential triumphs and challenges for 2021. So let's transition over into that, Tammy. What are some of the things, as you look into your crystal ball, which I'm assuming all of the district supervisors, the Butte County supervisors, are given a crystal ball at the beginning of their term?
Absolutely, when you're sworn in.
Excellent. So yeah. As you look into this crystal ball, what are some of the challenges and potential triumphs that you see for this coming year?
Well, I love that you're phrasing it as both, because one of the challenges that I see that I think is pretty well recognized within our community is related to our community policing.
Mm.
And one of the areas where I see that really being addressed is I serve as the appointee to the Butte County Behavioral Health Advisory Board.
Mm-hmm.
And we met yesterday for our strategic planning, and it was really, just really gratifying to have so many folks in the room for a strategic planning, well, in the virtual room, of course,
mm-hmm.
For a strategic planning session where we're talking about how are we going to move our county forward with 40-hour CIT training, with implicit bias training, with supporting those folks who are dealing with folks who are in crisis.
Right.
And making sure that they are being directed to the services that are most appropriate, right? How are we going to keep folks with behavioral health issues out of our jails, or folks who are dealing with perhaps a substance abuse issue out of our, you know, our PUF, which might not be the most appropriate location for them. So
sure.
Really looking at that and you know, assigning these kind of individual work groups to work on specific issues, and encouraging, as an advisory board, encouraging the Board of Supervisors and the legislature to make changes that are going to benefit the services that folks receive. And so while I think that is going to be one of the biggest challenges we face, I also think it's one that we are taking a very proactive approach to.
Sure. I think another thing that I have seen in this past year, and I'm hoping will continue on into 2021, is the outpouring of charitable giving. I was told by, I think it's Project Blue Bag, that their food collection program collected more food than they have since they started. So that's a good thing.
Wow, yeah, it is.
But I imagine as well, let's talk about another potential challenge in 2021. I know that if I understand correctly, some of the rental assistance and it might be drying up here pretty soon, and especially if we don't get any forward movement in extra stimulus money. I am concerned about food insecurity. I am concerned about people who are being evicted from their houses and where they're going to go and what they're going to do.
Good. Yeah, we should all be concerned about that. I know that there is talk on the state level. I was reading in the SACB yesterday about them looking at the potential of renewing those protections through 2021.
Mm-hmm.
I would very much like to see that.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, 2020 was the year we did our census. You know, we'll find out how well we did, how how many folks we really counted.
Right.
But, you know, I think that one of the things people don't necessarily understand is that the census is so important because it's how we get our funding, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's population-based. And the other thing that happens or is triggered in 2020 every 10 years is we redistrict.
Right.
And we redistrict based on those census results. So in 2021, that is when we are going to see the county redistrict.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, that's going to be another area of both challenge as well as opportunity. For the first time, the Fair Maps Act will be enforced, and we will be required as a community to adhere to the Fair Maps Act.
Mm-hmm.
And depending upon how well we did with our census count, will then be redistricting the county. And I'm really looking forward to that process. You know, one of the things that they did at the local level with city council was that they looked at where incumbents lived when mm-hmm. they divvied up the map. And that's in opposition to what the Fair Maps Act says we're allowed to do. And so I'm very pleased, that the Board of Supervisors will not be permitted to do that.
Good. Very good. What other potential triumphs and challenges do you see in 2021?
Well, one of the other meetings that I attended this week was our Passages Advisory Council, which is addressing seniors in our community and adults. And as we know, seniors are being hit particularly hard with COVID in a way that a lot of other communities are not. Mm-hmm. And so linking back to that conversation we were having about connectivity, you know, we have a group of folks who are perhaps not as comfortable with an iPad or an electronic device, who are used to having in-person visits, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of changes that are taking place, especially with skilled nursing facilities. And so I think that we're going to see that challenge amplify, and hopefully we're going to see a response as well as we look at ways to connect folks with their loved ones in a more COVID-safe way.
Yeah. Right before I got on the phone with you, I got a notification on my phone that there was something going on, and Action News was there. And when I clicked on, it was a couple of our healthcare workers at Enloe Hospital receiving a vaccination.
Oh, okay.
So there's something to look forward to in 2021, seeing how that affects the whole big picture of our COVID crisis.
Yeah, I'm certainly interested in seeing, as well as how it affects our ability to have in-person school or other activities that we're used to. Because as when we're talking about the housing crisis and we're talking about the jobs crisis, a lot of it is folks not having daycare or not having the ability to send their kids to school. And so who's going to stay home with the child and supervise them during the day?
Yes, and I feel for you parents who still have kids in school. I mean, I lucked out. Mine graduated right at the end of the, right at the beginning of the pandemic there. He just graduated this last June. But it's been tough on parents who still have children at home.
Absolutely, and it's a bit of a balancing act.
Yeah.
There's one issue I would love to bring up that I'm hoping your listeners will not only pay attention to, but potentially get involved with. And it's an issue that came up back when I was on the city council, and the town of Paradise was looking for solutions to their septic and sewer issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be a very big issue in 2021 as the town of Paradise pursues the same remedy that they pursued, you know, way back in, I believe it was 2015,
mm-hmm.
To ship their waste down the Skyway to the Chico wastewater treatment facility.
Mm-hmm.
And Chico grew 10 years worth of growth in the 2 months following the campfire.
Right.
Typically we grow at a 2% growth rate. And the wastewater treatment facility was built out using the proposed and projected growth rates. So we have already seen a pretty significant increase with population since 2018. And then for them to continue to look at a solution that does not involve keeping their waste in Paradise and treating it is concerning to me.
Yeah.
And so I am hopeful that as folks are tuning in to the city issues, even though it is not yet a City of Chico issue,
mm-hmm.
That they will pay attention to this, and they will be looking for it, and they will be You know, when they built the big village at the top of the hill to respond to the campfire, they put in a significant wastewater treatment facility.
Yeah.
So it's not that it's not possible. It's just going to cost money.
Right.
And I think that we need, as communities, to invest in the infrastructure that we are going to need for our projected growth.
Yeah. Tammy, thank you so much for being on the show today. I'm very pleased that you were able to come on the show and kind of give us a little review of the past year. Most of us just want to pretend that 2020 didn't happen, but I'm glad that we were able to talk about it today.
That's our first step, right?
Exactly.
We have to admit that there was a problem, and 2020 was a problem.
Oh, not too hard to admit, my word.
It's that time
right,
of year again.
Thank you so much.
Cold
for being
nights,
on the show.
Frost on the rooftops, and you have to cover the plants at night.
Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah, the holidays. This season, it's even more important to support our local businesses as we put a close to an all-too-interesting 2020. Please consider shopping with locally owned businesses.
Visit kzfr.org for a list of KZFR supporters at the Underwriters tab on our homepage. Let's keep the North State strong, our businesses vibrant, and our jobs secure. Shop local for gifts and services, order from our eateries, and spread some love to the less fortunate.
Happy holidays to all, and let's start today to make a better tomorrow.
And this is Peace and Social Justice, and we are on KZFR 90.1 Chico listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And now we have Bob Trausch on the phone. So, Bob, welcome.
Thank you, Jesse.
Oh, my word. What a day and what a year. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to look back on 2020 and talk about some of the trials and triumphs as it relates to housing in Chico. Bob is, I call, the voice of Chico Housing Action Team, also known as CHAT. So, Bob, what is at the top of your list of challenges in 2020?
Well, for us, the challenge always is to get as many people housed as possible. And with the pandemic and with the two fires, I mean, we've had Tribeca here. I mean, it's been so bad in our community. We're at the top of the list as far as this ACEs score that gives, you know, talks about trauma in a community, in this case, Butte County. And we're number one in the state with the amount of trauma that people are experiencing in our community, which leads to many, many problems. But as far as housing, you know, we have we're pushing 200 people that we've gotten off the streets in our housing, and we get calls every single day for more and more people, and somebody hears about us and they're calling us. And the problem is there isn't enough housing. There isn't enough truly affordable housing. You know, a housing unit in Chico right now, a three-bedroom, one-bath, 1,500-square-foot house costs about $300,000, and that's not the cost of the land. That's just the cost of building permits, the equipment that you need to build the house, the cost of the labor, the fees for the city and the county and the state, and you know, so it's almost impossible. You're talking about a tremendous amount of cost per unit, and most of the people in our community, awful lot of them, especially after the campfire and the ridge fire and now the pandemic, are either unemployed or have a lower income, and they can't afford to get into this housing. So we're building some housing that really doesn't match the amount of money that people are making, and that's a real problem. And we know that with the campfire alone, 56,000 people in Butte County were temporarily displaced. That's 17.5% of the county's population was displaced by that fire, and there's still about 20,000 people we know that are still displaced with longer-term displacement. So it's a real problem for us as far as finding the housing. And one of the things that we've been somewhat successful in doing is finding homes, 3-, 4-, 5-bedroom homes that maybe have one couple in it or you know, and so we fill that house up. So we're using that, every one of those bedrooms we're using as a unit to put someone in, which ultimately costs less for each individual than it would be if they were having to rent the whole house.
Yeah.
It means living together, which is maybe not the best situation always, but it does mean that someone has a place to stay, a door to close, a lock to lock, food, a place to shower, to eat, and to be safe. And so that's one of the things we're doing. But as far as the actual, our biggest problem is enough people and enough money to continue doing what we're doing. It costs a lot of time because of the way our program works. We bring people in once a week to ensure that the people that are in houses are doing okay because of the trauma they've experienced, because of the things that have happened in their life. And we've actually had a rating system, like alpha, beta system, where we go in and we assess how much need there is, how much trauma is in this house, how much trauma this individual have. And we work with that, and we assign people, depending on their experience and knowledge, to work with those people to reduce that. Because our whole goal, ultimately, is to have permanent housing for people to get them out.
Right.
And, again, our biggest problem is the cost of housing has gone up so dramatically in the last, before the pandemic.
Before the fire,
right. It was going up significantly. When you're paying $1,500 to $1,600 for a two-bedroom home, which is happening in the community, an awful lot of people can't afford that.
Yeah.
So that's our major problem is how are we going to have people housed if we don't have enough housing? And that's another figure, actually. I'm kind of jumping around here. I'm not at home where I was, as you know. I had some information. So it's a little bit different situation. But we know that most of the people in this community, an awful lot of them, don't have the income. You're only supposed to put out 30% of your income to be able to afford an apartment. And we know that an awful lot of people don't match that. Some people are paying 70 to 80% of their income just to get in.
Yeah.
And the landlords don't take people like that. So Chad has become kind of a go-to for that because we master lease and we say, okay, we'll get you in. We'll master lease. We'll guarantee the landlord that they're going to get their money every month for rent. We'll guarantee the landlord that we'll help with the maintenance of the property. If there is an eviction, we'll do that eviction. So we're really helping in that way. But what that allows us to do is get people off the street and be able to afford that income, whether they have a part-time job, a minimum wage full-time job, whether they're on SSI, SDI, Social Security. So we have all of those. And we have five different programs. We have a HAT program, a HUSH program. HAT is for people who are individuals we get in the house. The HUSH is for families in crisis. We have a Redwood program for students from Chico State and Butte College. We have a veterans home. We have homes for people with mental illness. We have another homes that we're putting people in, a CHAMP program where we're putting people in that have suffered this last fire and are in crisis and need to be stabilized, and we're working with landlords on that. So we're trying all of these different things. But our need is studio and one-bedroom units.
Mm-hmm.
And every unit that comes available, studio and one-bedroom, there's 10 people trying to get into that unit.
Wow.
It's just not working.
Yeah.
Community. So talking about going forward with CHAT, we have a few things that we're looking at right now. We're working with Butte County on building 20 to 22 tiny homes that will be taking in people on the street who have mental illness, who can't get stabilized because they're on the street, and we'll put them in, we'll stabilize them, and then we work with them, and the county will work with them, behavioral health, to stabilize them, to get them into permanent housing, stabilize in permanent housing. We're also looking at the possibility, and we're really pursuing this, is actually to buy a motel and convert that to transitional housing.
Mm.
And that property will also allow us to build on it, possibly as many as 60 units of studio and one-bedroom units, where that can become more of a permanent housing situation for people that we first bring in, stabilize, maybe help them get a job, get them on Social Security, get them on SSI. Whatever that situation is in their life that we need to work on, we'll try and get them there and then get them into permanent housing.
Yeah. It's interesting how a lot of the crises that were present last year, let's just say the fire, the pandemic, more fires, all sorts of challenges, and they all seem very interrelated as far as the stress it puts on people who do not have a roof.
Right.
Let's talk about some folks who are out on the street right now. I know that supposedly, and I haven't seen this with my own two eyes, but I know that there are there is a mandate to get people out of the park and out of that little place on Pine Street there, and that the police are supposed to be enforcing moving that. How is that going? What have you seen?
Well, that's going to have a tremendous impact. Actually, 2 days ago, I was interviewing people and working with a Respectful Revolution to get some stories about the people on the street and what's happening to them, why they're there. So that should be coming out actually pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
And they're freaked out. They're saying, where are we supposed to go?
Right.
You know, I was talking to a woman day before yesterday. She was like, I came to Chico because I had family here 3 years ago because I had stomach cancer. And I couldn't, you know, I had to go through this. I ended up being homeless, and I lost my child because of it. And I've been, and she, you know, she breaks into tears. I'm desperately trying to get my child back. But I'm considered homeless. I'm one of the people who have been lost in the community. And how do I get back? I've worked my whole life. I had a business at one point. So there's so many stories out there. The problem I see personally is we're going to give misdemeanors to people who are living in a tent.
Mm.
That means that they're going to have to go to court, which costs money. The police are going to interact with them. That's going to cost money. Potentially jail, which costs money. And they still have no place to live. Do they just move from that spot and try and find another spot somewhere else in the city to camp because we don't have the options for them? That's not a win-win situation. It's actually a very, very expensive situation versus looking at trying to house people and helping them, or having a tent city or a camp city with, and there's some really nice units now available for very inexpensive cost to be put up. What we need is the city to make that determination that they're willing to do that, to find the land, city land, that an organization be able to put tents up, put some facilities up, have food, have services brought to them. And that hasn't really happened. We know that that's been on the table for a really long time. It keeps getting put off. And instead, we now have is we're going to charge people with misdemeanors for having a quality of life that we don't like, but we're not willing to help them change that.
Yeah.
And so the people in the street are pretty freaked out. They're saying, where am I supposed to go? What am I supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have people that tell me all the time, I'm living on the street, and people, especially some women, people are taking care of me. They're making sure that I get food and I'm safe. And yet I can't get in someplace because the city doesn't have any place for me to go. The only thing they're willing to do is give me a misdemeanor and send me to jail.
Right.
And that's not an answer.
And then the added problem to that, which is COVID-related, is our temporary shelters, Safe Space. I know that's not a part of Chad anymore, but the Safe Space is facing some challenges right now because there are no buildings that they can use to house folks who need temporary sheltering.
Exactly. That happened. I mean, there's been like four different places that the city has talked about having a shelter, and each one has fallen through. I don't know the reasons for that. That's mm-hmm. up to the city to let the residents know why that's happened, but that has fallen through, so we don't have those places available because there are groups of people in the community, like Safe Space, are willing to step up and make that happen if, in fact, the city gives us that land or gives those people that land to be able to actually start a shelter. We've talked about what the shelter would need, how it would be run, even bringing such things as music and entertainment and things so that people get along, figuring out, you know, people in the community, the homeless community, are the same as people in houses. They have each person like certain things to be able to figure out how people, where they should be in that community to make sure that there's a safety factor. All the things that we can do as a community has not been allowed to be done because we haven't had that connection between the city and the community at large to be able to make that happen.
Yeah.
It's really unfortunate that we pass, to me, draconian laws to punish people who, as we've said, you know, in the campfire alone, there were 58,000 people, according to my reading, that are 56,000 people that became temporarily displaced. And now that was 17.5% of the residents of this county.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And there's still 20,000 people. We know what happened. Many of those people moved away, but a lot of them are still living in our streets or living under our bridges. Now we had Room Key. A lot of people have moved in were very vulnerable and room key into the, some of the motels. There was a grant for that. But that's running out. They're going to be back on the streets. You stabilize someone, and then you put them back out in the streets, which creates even more trauma in their life that we're going to have to deal with as a community.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, this is Peace and Social Justice here on KZFR. And Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local seasonal and organic offerings at Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts. They have vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farmstar Pizza is open 7 days a week for to-go lunch and dinner orders. Find Farmstar Pizza at 2359 The Esplanade, at farmstarpizza.com, and on Facebook. Their phone number to order is 343-2056. And by Regional Continuing Education at Chico State. They are offering online reading and study programs for all ages, from beginner readers to older students and adults. Instructors guide you or your kids to becoming enthusiastic readers and skilled students. So learn more about the programs and view the fall schedule at rce.csuchico.edu/reading. And this is Peace and Social Justice. I'm your host, Jesse Kearns, and today we have Bob Trausch on the phone from Chico Housing Action Team, and we're reviewing the challenges and triumphs of 2020 and looking into some of the challenges that might be facing us in 2021 as well. So, Bob, let's talk about some of the triumphs. I just received an email this morning giving me some really good news about some fundraisers that you've been having.
Yes, we've been very, very fortunate with this community. Part of it's mostly a volunteer organization, and it's been amazing support from this community, all aspects of it. I mean, we had a great fundraising just right now. We just finished a great fundraiser that we've raised over $50,000. Our yearly, we have three or four fundraisers that we plan, and they've all been in facilities in Chico. With the pandemic, obviously, that has all changed. We've gone, like so many other people, to the internet to do some of our fundraising, but it's been very successful. And I think it's amazing to me, honestly, how much the city supports what Chad is doing, and not just Chad, the Jesus Center, the Torah Shelter, 6th Street. There's so much support because they know, I believe, how hard we're working to try and make Chico a better and safer place for everyone, not just the people who are unhoused, but the whole community. We know that there's an impact when people are homeless because of the things that happen when you're homeless and you don't have choices. So it's been really a blessing for us to see the support that has come to us. And we're planning more of those. We're planning more productions right now. We actually had a meeting yesterday about some more productions that we're going to be putting on. And a lot of that shows the people that have been housed and that the changes in their life. And so it's been just gratifying to know that we continue to have that support. All of the agencies in the community are continuing to have the support of a substantial portion of the Chico community, who see the need for what is being done by the service providers and realize that it's so necessary to keep Chico safer.
Yeah. So let's talk about the city. You said the city is very supportive of CHAT. And I think what you were saying is that the citizens of Chico are very supportive. I would like to know, do you feel supported at all by our leadership in our city? I know there are quite a few people who believe in the mission and ministry. This is where I come, the mission and ministry of CHAT. But how do we get folks in leadership positions to get on board?
Well, I think it's a collaboration, and I think there's been a failure there with collaboration. I see what I've seen going on for quite a while with the city council and with the community at large, is that there's a polarization. I see that there's kind of like two voices going on. there are two monologues rather than a dialogue, and I think that the city is missing out, that we should be working together and be having a dialogue about how to change what's happening in the community, how to make things better. And I'm hoping that we can start talking to the new city council. We have this new city council. I'm hoping that we can change the direction by actually starting a dialogue and looking for solutions, and I think that that's what chat has always been about, small solutions. We look at a problem and say, okay, how can we impact this problem? And I think all the other service providers look at what they do in the same way. How do we make something better? What is the solution for this? And I think that the city and the city council has a different solution in mind. From my perspective, it's not a solution. It just exasperates the problem. When you punish people, you put people in jail, you're not helping that problem. And I'm thinking that what we need to do is stop having monologues and start having dialogues with all the people in the community. I hear, well, they're conservative. I hear it all the time. Bob, you can't talk to that person. He's conservative or she's conservative. Mm-hmm. I think if I don't talk to that person, we're going to continue having monologues instead of dialogues. So it's really important for us to reach out to the city council and talk about actual solutions and be more inclusive. I think there's been such a polarization, especially for the last 4 or 5 years, there's been a major polarization between what we think we need to do and how to do it.
Right.
We know we have a problem. We know we have a problem with homelessness in a community. We know that it's going to get worse. We all know that. There's a new figure that 22 million people may be losing their housing because of not being able to pay rent.
Right. It's just beginning.
Exactly. It's just beginning. Exactly. We know it's going to get worse. So what is the solution? Was it a good move to make people go to jail or give them a misdemeanor and have them go to jail in the court because they're living someplace they shouldn't be living?
Right.
And I agree that living in the parks is not the best thing at all for the people that are living there. It's not the answer.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't explored that. And I think we need to start dialoguing with the city manager, with the city council members, and sit down as a group, and I'm hoping that the city actually can hear this and actually bring people in from the service providers and say, hey guys, can you talk to us about what you would envision having this problem, helping to change this problem with homelessness in our parks? What do you see as a solution to that? And then once you're dialoguing, you change hearts and minds. You change people's view of how to take care of a problem and what that solution is. And we're not doing that right now.
Right.
I don't see that at all. I see, again, it's been really bothering me to see two monologues going on from both the you could call it the left and the right. We're not getting together. We're not talking to each other. There's maybe some attacking going on verbally, but we're not sitting down and saying, you know, was this a good solution for this? What is the outcome of that solution? That decision, what is that decision going to accomplish, and what is the outcome of that?
Yeah.
And we're not doing that, and we have to start doing that.
For sure. Bob, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the air today. I appreciate all that you're doing and all that chat is doing to help a very serious problem here in our community.
Thank you. Thank you to KZFR for being there.
Absolutely. Glad to. And speaking of which, we are KZFR 90.1, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And we are going to take a little song break. This is Andrew Moran with Taillights.
Hometown, I'm so now.
Andra Moran with her song Tail Lights on the Horizon. Hey, if you enjoy this program, which is Peace and Social Justice, you can tip the program. You can actually go to kzfr.org and tip this show. So show us that you love us. We sure appreciate you and all you do to keep this station broadcasting the best programs that we can possibly broadcast here. Well, here we are in this final few weeks of 2020, and I'm very thankful for the folks here at Peace and Social Justice, our other hosts, who encourage diverse programming. Of course, the opinions voiced on the program don't necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, or underwriters. We value diversity and all of its incomprehensible combinations. And so here on KZFR, we seek to give you the very best of what's going on in our community and in our world. I'm going to play my last interview here. This is with my co-host for Faith and Common Ground as we look back on this year. And here we are at Faith and Common Ground at the end of 2020. Well, almost the end. We've got a couple more weeks.
So close. We can do this.
We can do this. 2020 is about ready to be just a memory, a little blip in history. Insignificant.
Right.
Oh my gosh. What we wanted to do today is just kind of give a review of the year 2020 and talk about some of the challenges and also some of the triumphs too, because we don't always like to live in the problem. We like to live in the solution here at Faith and Common Ground. So Amber, let's go ahead and just get right into it. Let's talk about some of the biggest challenges that we've had in 2020. What's your top one?
My top personal challenge?
Sure.
It's not having consistency with reality and and not being able to do my normal hands-on healing work. I feel really disconnected from who I am, because I built my own reality around my service work.
Yeah. So we're talking about personal challenges. Okay, what is one of my biggest personal challenge? My biggest personal challenge this year is just to stay focused, to keep on track of things. Because I can't tell you how many times that I have really not known what day of the week it was, and just trying to keep a schedule, trying to keep something that's consistent going on in my life to help me navigate what would normal be, what would I normally doing without a pandemic going on.
And that brings me to the next fun thing, I think, is that what the hell is going to be the new normal? Like, what can we even, you can't even make plans for things. It's really weird.
Well, and here again, we can look at this both as a tragedy and triumph type of a thing, because I honestly think that there are some things that we have learned in the past year that will help us when we do get back to whatever normal is, you know? But, okay, let's talk about big picture challenges. Let's talk about, first of all, just the pandemic in general. It's affected our local economy. It's, well, affected national economy.
Global.
Yeah, right. It has affected the way people are able to meet and relate to each other. There's not as much physical contact. That's rough for you. You're a hugger.
And it's rough for our show because it's hard for us to arrange those meetings as easily as we used to. We have a new way now, but...
Yeah.
Head shake. You can't see it, but the head shaking.
The head shake. It doesn't translate for podcasts and radio, does it? And yet... Through that, like, let's just take faith communities. Let's just take churches, mosques, spiritual centers. Not being able to meet has challenged people to find new ways to stay connected with their folks. And go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking about my dad. He now brags about going to church in all these different locations because he's doing it through Zoom. And, you know, so it is helping some people who have mobility issues who normally wouldn't have access to have access. So that's great.
Yeah. In fact, our attendance has been stable. In fact, when we first started, we had quite a few people tuning in on Zoom and Facebook Live. And fortunately, we were equipped to do that. We had we normally put our services on YouTube, so it wasn't really hard to just adjust things to where we were doing it on Zoom. And the nice thing about Zoom is that people can see each other, people can interact with each other, whereas on Facebook Live, that's tough because they can just type in the comments and such. But I know there's a lot of churches who are smaller churches who have some technological challenges, and it took them a little while to get on board, and they're still having a hard time connecting with their people and having that sense of fellowship.
Yeah, if I was to sum up the biggest challenge that I see that breaks my heart is the connecting with people and, you know, thinking of our elderly and the people who are dying and they're not allowed to see their family members and things like this is what's really heartbreaking about 2020, even more heartbreaking than the economy.
Exactly. However, I do have some good news. I was contacted by a local hospital yesterday, which I will not name because I don't know whether this is official, but they called me up to talk about the people who are in the hospital who aren't able to have visitors. And the director that called me said that she was distressed because so many people have died in the hospital alone. And it's not just people who have coronavirus. I mean, there's other people who go in there and they die. But because of the coronavirus, they aren't able to have any visitors. Or the visitors have to be all geared up in personal protective clothing. So what they've done, what this local hospital has done, is they've dusted off a bunch of iPads. And they've arranged it to where if somebody is in the hospital room or even if they're COVID positive, that they can connect with their families through this iPad, that they're bringing up their own little Zoom room so that people don't have to be sick alone or die alone or anything like that. So that's a good thing.
That is a good thing. I still don't know how we can cyber hug, though, and cyber hold hands and... Like, somebody needs to invent something cool. Not creepy, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was about ready to tell you about something, but you're, you threw in the creepy thing. Okay,
yeah,
we're going to have
mind.
To. All right, never mind on that one.
I know about that. Some guy married his doll. Did you hear?
No. Oh, golly.
It was a beautiful service.
Oh, you can tell that Amber and I have had a heck of a year. We're still having fun. All right, let's lay the virus aside then. And let's talk about just the general atmosphere of polarization. Now, back in the spring, we had Kate McCarthy from Chico State talking about the difficulties that we are having as a nation, especially in leadership, because of the vast polarization that is between ideologies, political parties, whatever. What's your take on that one?
Well, I'm going to go with my tried and true, never changed this perception for 20 plus years. A lot of it is politically and economically motivated for divide and conquer. And I think that this year, as with the Trump presidency, what I have seen is that a lot more of these latent issues, you know, it's not like racism is a new problem. It's not like Black Lives Matter is a new problem. These are problems that have been here for a very, very long time. And this year is like, you know, the sheet got pulled over and we're all looking at the nasty mess that was hiding in the corner finally. So that's how I feel about it. These problems are not new by any means. It's just we can't run from our problems anymore. We can't even leave our house.
Yeah. And I think what bothers me about this most, just coming from somebody who leads a faith community, it's sad when those political things mm-hmm. come into the church. You know, we're supposed to be going to church to learn about ourselves, to learn how to handle our spiritual practices and things. And yet when we're so bogged down by partisan politics, because we've allowed them to come into church, I can see how that turns a lot of people off. And I see how the church has lost a lot of credibility over not just the last year, but the last several years, because they're so willing to just jump in bed with the whatever political ideology is on display.
Yeah, that's interesting, too, because I do see a lot of pressure. There's a lot of social pressure that if you are not picking this one side or the other, you're complicit in whatever evil is perceived the other side is doing. And I think it's difficult for faith communities and people who, like me, my life mission is peace, is making peace, personal peace, planetary peace. That requires a lot of meeting in the middle, mm-hmm. a lot of putting aside your differences to focus on positivity. And it seems like that's not even really welcome energetically in these times, and that's sad.
Indeed. Well, if you're just joining us, this is Peace and Social Justice on KZFR, and this is our Faith and Common Ground segment. We're going to take a little break right now to acknowledge our wonderful underwriters. And if you're just tuning in, KZFR is supported by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Quicksilver Courier Service, established in 2010. Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services. Quicksilver provides courier services for private individuals as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality 24/7 delivery service. And by Sonia Airy, an Allstate insurance agent. Sonia is concerned about the community and helps families understand their immediate and long-term needs and their goals. So for more information about protecting your life, your home, your vehicle, or your boat, or to roll over your 401k account, call Sonia at 345-2351.
Honey cold. honesty, your whims are always met. Honeycomb, and I'm a lucky fool in courtly dress, but the jokes are all on me. And I'm reminded of your words.
All the stars burning in the sky. Stars burning in the sky. How can anyone see just one?
Honeycomb, honeycomb, honeycomb.
If you're just joining us, this is KZFR 90.1 Chico Listener Supported Community Radio, and this is Peace and Social Justice. I am your third Friday host, Jesse Kearns, doing a little review of the year 2020 and maybe looking forward to some hopeful things in the year 2021. We will join my interview with my co-host for Faith and Common Ground, Amber St. Clair. This is KZFR 90.1, people-powered community radio, and I'm your host, Jesse Kearns. And this is our Faith and Common Ground segment, so I'm also joined here by my co-host, Amber French St. Clair. And we are reviewing the year 2020 and looking at some of the challenges and triumphs. And maybe we can even look into 2021 a little bit and talk about some of our hopes and dreams for 2021. But let's go back to 2020 again, because let's see, we've covered coronavirus, we've covered political polarization. Let's cover fires, because we are still dealing with the devastation of the Camp Fire that happened in 2018. And then this past summer, we had another huge fire sweep through Butte County and take out some other communities. And even people who had escaped from the campfire and relocated because of the campfire into communities that were destroyed.
I personally know people who have been through two or three fires at this point. And, you know, even those of us who are not survivors of the actual fire, our community has been rocked to its core. And I still personally am not stable since the fire. It's been so, it's the amount of change that we're all dealing with. I mean, we only have one ridge left nearby that hasn't been through a huge fire. That's right. A lot. Yeah.
And of course, that has contributed greatly to, we were already in the midst of a housing crisis before the campfire. Mm-hmm. And then it became a housing emergency. And I would say we've never left that stage of housing emergency right now.
Well, and I don't think we're really going anywhere in that direction. It looks like whatever housing we have is all for people with high income, which people suffering from recovering from losing everything. And then now everyone's losing their jobs, their businesses, their clientele, whatever. It's like, what are we supposed to do next? You know, what is this next year going to be like?
That's a good question, because it's evident in our community just for the issue of people without a roof, people who are living outdoors, how that has become such a central part of our political discourse here in Chico, in Butte County. And I don't see too many resolutions to this problem. There's a lot of arguing about what should be done. And there are different ideologies at work when it comes to finding out or discovering what a solution might be. But we're just stuck. And I think that goes back to that polarization thing.
Yeah, and it's a really complicated issue. I mean, we have fire victims, we have mental health problems, we have drug problems, we have people who are just down on their luck problems. Like, there's a lot to it. So it's going to take a multi-approach. So I have heard that they're breaking the camps up at Bidwell right now. And then I also heard, but I cannot confirm, that there were two proposed sites to relocate them, just where it's not so that it's in the city parks. And this is a catch-22 for me, because I really miss being able to go to the park. I really miss feeling safe walking around my neighborhood. But I also don't want to see people not have a home. And I also don't want to see people kicked out of the one little spot that they've managed to make for themselves during this really challenging time.
So it sounds like you're just as mixed up in feelings as I am about this.
Well, that's why we're on this show together, because we find the common ground. And it's not throw the baby out with the bathwater type thing, right? It's like, we appreciate them, but things need to change.
So let's see. We have done coronavirus. We've done campfire. We've talked about the housing issue here in Chico. What are some triumphs that we can talk about that's happened over the last year?
Can we go to break so I can come up with some?
Well, actually, if let's see what I've got. Oh, and by the way, if you're just tuning in, this is KZFR 90.1, and this is Peace and Social Justice. I'm your host, Jesse Kearns, and this is my co-host, Amber French St. Clair, for our Faith and Common Ground segment. And let's see, in the time that it took me to say that, I'm thinking, what kind of triumphs have we had this last year? Well, here's one. And this goes back to some of the things that I said earlier. We found some different ways to connect with people, mm-hmm. but some people have found different ways to do their jobs. I mean, we've got a lot of folks who are working from home. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of folks who now go to meetings online, mm-hmm. and they're discovering we can do it.
Well, and you didn't have to travel as much this year, but you still got to do those same seminars that you normally teach and things like that, right? So that was cool.
Yeah. What that's about is that I'm involved in some regional, our church's regional manifestation. I do ethics and boundaries training, and I'm on an anti-racism task force. There's some things like that where I would have normally had to travel either to Sacramento or San Ramon, or somewhere down in the Bay Area. And we've all agreed that we should meet online. And then it's like, hey, this is good. We have more participation. We have more people actually coming to these meetings. And so I think that's one thing that we can be a little bit more efficient, I think, with our time when it comes to meeting with other people.
Mm-hmm. And along with that, there's a potential here in some rumors coming around that parents who want to homeschool from now on, they will have that already set up. It'll be easier for them. That will make it good. That's also a whole nother challenge that we won't get into for people who are homeschooling. But again, it is nice to connect. I have also shifted a lot of my counseling work to online and Zoom. And so it is good that we can still connect in these ways. And we're grateful for that.
And yoga. We were able to do yoga online, thanks to you and our guest that we had last spring, Jeanette Connery, who came in and just talked about how to stay healthy during this mm-hmm. pandemic and how to not let our bodies just go kaput. Although in the last couple of weeks in the holiday season, I've kind of let things go kaput a little bit.
I say let it rest. It's the holidays.
But yeah, it's been nice having those opportunities to have online opportunities to stay healthy and well.
Well, and this is kind of a both sides of the coin, you know, this common ground, this space where, touching on what we said before about the, it's fake polarization from my opinion, because I do talk to people on the right and the left and everywhere in between. And most of the time we're closer to the same page. But the thing that's good about this last year is that those things aren't hidden anymore. Nobody's trusting right off the bat. Where, you know, no one's taking whatever the media tells them right off the bat. Like, everybody's doing a lot more inquiry. Everybody's forced to do self-inquiry now, because you can't go run to your whatever distractions. So it's both, you know, all these negatives are a positive, right? Like, anything we can say that sucked, there was a part of it that was great, because isn't that how life works?
Yeah, it is. And this is reminiscent of our guest, Alexandra Chris, that we had back in the summer, and some of the things that she was talking about. So let's look into the year 2021. I know so many people have said 2020 can just kiss my butt, and I can't wait for it to be over. And yet, there's not a magic line, you know. December 31st isn't this finish line where when we cross into that, all of a sudden things are going to be better. It's going to take some time, but as we are approaching the potential end of the pandemic, let's just say that right now we have the possibility of an effective vaccine. We have people practicing better, for the most part, social distancing and wearing masks. There is a potential that this year the pandemic's effects might lessen as time goes on. So we're working towards a semblance of normal, but it's a new normal. It's going to be a normal that has different practices that we do. What do you see is the biggest hope, in your opinion, for this coming year and some of the triumphs that can come out of it?
Didn't Fauci say it was going to be till 2022?
Well, true, but, you know, let's be hopeful.
Oh, hopeful. Yes. I'm sorry.
This segment is
okay,
hopeful.
I got it.
We have 3-4 minutes to be hopeful.
Okay, later. I can do that. Well, in the woo-woo community, we're all pretty excited about the Age of Aquarius, and we're pretty excited about the December 21st conjunction, that Christmas star you're going to see. And honestly, I'm happy for whatever old that's broken that needs to be destroyed and leave. And I'm excited for everybody to get off their butts and create some new stuff. I have no idea what that's going to look like. And that's exciting and terrifying. But I do believe that whether we get it together and choose to make positive changes in those places in our structure of reality that we live in that we can't take, if you're like, this is wrong, then you're the one that's supposed to do something about it to change it. And that makes me excited.
Yeah. And I guess one of my hopes for the new year is, we've had two guests on our show this past year that have talked about food and permaculture, mm-hmm. and learning how to be more proactive in our own care, mm-hmm. that we aren't always scraping in that bottom of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, mm-hmm. you know.
I think you hit it right on the head. If we could sum it up, it would be, people are taking more responsibility for their health, their reality, where they, you know, the everything. If you don't like a part of how the world works, then that's your place to fix it, and it starts with taking care of yourself first.
Well, Amber, we've gone through another year together, another year of faith and common ground. I think I've been doing peace and social justice since 2016.
Wow.
Since November 2016. It's been a fun ride. It's been a fun ride having you on board this past year, and for the wonderful other hosts at Peace and Justice for allowing us to broadcast Faith in Common Ground on this show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We'll see you next year.
Happy New Year.
Culture, uncle, said we're up here for the holiday. Jane and I were having solstice. Now we need a place to stay. And her Christ-loving uncle watched his wife hang Mary on a tree. He watched his son hang candy canes all made with red dye number three. He told his niece it's Christmas Eve. I know our life is not your style. She said Christmas is like solstice and we miss you and it's been a while. So the Christians and the pagans sat together at the table, finding faith and common ground the best that they were able. Just before the meal was served, hands were held and prayers were said, sending hope for peace on earth to all their gods and goddesses.
And you are tuned to listener-supported community radio at 90.1 KZFR in Chico. Get ready for Playing Dead, Music of the Grateful Dead, every Friday afternoon from 1 to 3. But first, the community calendar.
KZFR listeners, it's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM community calendar. I'm Matt Fidler. Now, approximately 60 million Americans live with some form of disability. With one in every five people living with a disability, it's important that Americans remain informed about disability and chronic health problems. DisabilityCampaign.org informs Americans on disability and chronic health matters, rising awareness and advocacy to foster a culture that embraces people affected by disability and enables them to live to their fullest potential. Visit disabilitycampaign.org for resources, legal resources, community resources, educational resources about everything from autism to visual disabilities. Again, that website is disabilitycampaign.org. Now, want a place to be able to work on your arts and craft projects while being around other creative people? Why don't you cruise down to the Durham branch of the Butte County Library any Wednesday from 10 a.m. to noon for a morning of crafts with other creative adults? It's a bring-your-own-craft situation at the Durham branch at 2545 Durham-Dayton Highway in Durham, of course. Now, since 2020 was such an insane year of social distancing and mask wearing, why should visiting Santa Claus be any different this year? Due to health concerns, Santa would prefer to meet virtually this year. Register online to get your child some FaceTime with the old man Kringle via Zoom. You'll get a copy of the call to keep so you'll always remember your first and hopefully last COVID Christmas. The virtual event can be found at amusematbooksanta.com/Chico Mall. Again, that's amusemat, M-A-T-T-E, booksanta.com/Chico-Mall. And just a reminder that both the Paradise Art Center and Chico Art Centers are having virtual exhibits. Just either Google Paradise or Chico Art Center to find out how to visit them. Plus, the 1078 Gallery and Naked Lounge in Chico are both looking for new submissions. So if you're an artist, hit them up to see if your work fits their needs. Wishing you a happy and safe holiday season, this is the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar.
All righty. Thank you, Matt. My name's Ray. I'll be your host today here on Playing Dead, Music of the Grateful Dead, every Friday afternoon from 1 to 3. Got a fun show for you. We're rolling back 1971 to December 5th, 71 at the Felt Forum in New York City. For those who don't know, the Felt Forum is located